Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to ModPath Chat, the official podcast of Modern Pathology, featuring interviews with authors and experts on the latest science, technology, and developments in the field of pathology. Your host, Dr. George Netto, is the editor-in-chief of Modern Pathology and the chair of pathology at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Here's Dr. Netto.
Welcome to a new episode of ModPath Chat. My guests today are Dr. Claire Verrill and Mr. Andrea Chatrian. They are joining us from the University of Oxford in England. Dr. Verrill is an associate professor of pathology and an honorary consultant in neurologic pathology at Oxford. Her research focuses on digital pathology and artificial intelligence. The audience will be interested to know that Oxford hospitals recently achieved the important milestone of digitizing all their surgical pathology workloads. So I guess they went live with this. This is one of the first few laboratories in the UK to do so. Dr. Verrill and Mr. Chatrian will be discussing with us the recent work in modern pathology, published in Modern Pathology, on artificial intelligence for advanced requesting of IHC in diagnostically ambiguous prostate biopsy, I guess. They are representing all the co-authors, but in particular, joint first author, Dr. Colling, and joint senior author, Professor Richard. Thank you both for accepting my invitation.
Thank you so much for the invitation. We're absolutely delighted to be invited. So thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity.
All right, Andrea. I can't believe how young the first authors are getting, but that's awesome. So let's start with the background. The usual question, I guess, in this case is somewhat obvious. The title gives it away. So what led you to do the study and what did you hoping it will find?
Yeah, thanks. So Oxford is part of the PathLake Digital Pathology Consortium, and that's one of the UK government's AI centres of excellence, of which there are five. And our exemplar project is prostate, and one of the aims of PathLake is to build AI algorithms. And so we held a meeting between the wider group of pathologists and engineers and decided this was something we could do that was tangible and would have a concrete output and would be usable. And so we set out to build an AI tool that could request immunohistochemistry before a pathologist has even seen the case. And we believe that this would remove time within the workflow. From our studies, we found that it took 2 days for a pathologist to get to the H&Es to request immunohistochemistry. That's sort of wasted time. And then there's duplication of effort. When a pathologist has to review a case more than once, the second time you're refamiliarizing yourself with the case, and again, there's duplication of effort and wasted time there. So we wanted to build a tool that could recognize that a case needed immunohistochemistry
because
it was ambiguous and could request it up front.
So you say in the UK, the pathologist takes 2 days to even look at the slides? I'm just joking. That's from the time the slides are ready or?
From the time it's booked into the department, I believe, to the pathologist looking at the case.
So that's
those are just our figures that we found from our study.
All right, great. So let's move on. Clearly, that's That's a very important topic to address. And hopefully that's the promise of AI, rather than taking away our job, facilitating our job as pathologists. So this is a great example where it can make it lean and efficient. So can maybe Andrea can pick up this and tell us a little bit about the design, all these algorithms, names, what is it, the gradient boosted tree classification, all these things that pathologists are afraid of. Can you simplify for us? How did you do it?
Yeah. So basically, in order to fully capture all the differences in morphology that you can find on histology slides, we need an algorithm that can mimic basically the eye of the pathologist and recognize parts of the slides that would normally be hard to confidently diagnose from the simple H&E stain. So there's this new class of algorithms which have attracted a lot of attention lately, which is deep neural networks, which seem to be able to do this and to really extract the important information from the image that similar to how a human being usually is capable of doing. And then learning to make simple decisions, like, for example, this binary decisions or deciding whether some epithelial structure has a recognizable morphology or not. So
atypical or not, basically, is it exactly difficult to that? And so and then also it you train it how to differentiate between a case where, because it's not just some atypicals, we can diagnose them as cancer, right? If the features are enough. So it's focusing on the really borderline lesion. The AI, the deep network could do that, huh?
Yeah, so the AI is trained on annotations that basically we gathered over the 6-month period by Claire and Richard and our other collaborator, Lisa. So it replicates the diagnostic procedure that goes on in the hospital. So whatever the whole function of it is based on what pathologists would like to try and mimic pathologists' expertise.
So the training set, if I understand, was 219 biopsies or cases, and all these were annotated by one pathologist or more than one pathologist when you develop the algorithm?
So these slides were collected prospectively in the hospital. So are actually cases that are being diagnosed during clinical activity by three different pathologists.
Okay. So regular work.
So that guarantees that we have some mixture of opinion on in the training set, and we're not basing the whole algorithm on basically one pathologist decisions, which might be biased. And
correct. And I think that we can tackle that question now. I mean, because there is a difference between what depending on the training, depending on the subspecialization, stage of your career, how experience, how much you need ISC. So I'm glad to see that this was trying to cover as much as possible the spectrum of these variations among pathologists' need for ancillary study. Correct.
Yeah, I think that's important. And also just to add, so the three pathologists covered a range of sort of experience, so that, you know, so we tried to take that into account, because you're right, there are so many more factors at work when making the decision to request immunohistochemistry than it simply being a yes or no decision. You know, there's personality factors, as you say, experience, so many things at work there.
If you're having a bad day, also.
Yeah, it's like what time of the day it is.
I guess the computer doesn't have a bad day. So that's well, wonderful. So may I ask, those three were urologic pathologists or some were general pathologists, or how did it work?
No, all three are specialist urological pathologists. Okay. So myself, Dr. Colling, the joint first author, and Dr. Lisa Browning, who's an extremely experienced urological pathologist. So yeah, it was the three of us and yeah. identifying.
I knew the name, but I wanted the audience to know. All right, wonderful. So Andrea, let's you trained the system, and then you did 200, another 222 cases, and how well did your algorithm do?
The first evaluation was done using cross-validation on the slides that were collected in the hospital, and that performed actually really well. So it seems that on that data set, the algorithm was able to recognize, to predict which slides the would require RHC. And then we collected 222 slides from the hospital archive, our three pathologist collaborators annotated each one of the slides. So the reason we did this is because we wanted to compare the pathologist annotation and then give an idea to the readers of how the algorithm, what decisions the algorithm makes and how those are different with respect to each individual pathologist decision.
So all three pathologists, each one of them looked at the case, at the focus, without knowing, of course, what the AI...
Yes, blinded to... Exactly.
All right.
And here then, just in order to characterize the performance of the network, we averaged the accuracy obtained with respect to each individual pathologist. And this is lower, so it's the accuracy is 81%, which reflects the fact that there are inherent disagreements on a subset of the slides.
I see. So the AI performed less even of the average of the three pathologists. Is that in terms of accuracy? If you consider, what was the golden truth? I mean, if the three pathologists are different, How do you test your AI?
Yeah, I think this is it's a very interesting question because there is a subjective component to IHC, as you just mentioned. And the ground truth is formed by opinions of different experts. So what we can say is that the algorithm is able to match the consensus on those cases where pathologists agrees with a high degree of accuracy.
Excellent. Thank you. Very good job clarifying this. So I guess, Claire, you can tackle next. So what were the results? I mean, from a practical point, how is it changed? You expected to change our practice?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we proved the concept that that we had a tool that could make that decision that a case couldn't be signed out in H&E and could make the immunohistochemistry request. And as Andrea was just saying, in the validation phase, we found that the AI sort of replicated some of the pathologists better than the others. So just reflecting that inherent sort of subjectivity in the decision. And we know, don't we, with anything like where there's a decision to be made, even things like Gleason grading, that there will be variations between pathologists. But I think the tool performance is good. And the question is where we go next with it.
You save some time. I guess the findings was that you save, you're mentioning minutes per case.
Yeah, so we in the workflow audits that we did, we found basically that immunohistochemistry requested cases took twice as long to report the non-immunohistochemistry requested cases. So 17.9 minutes versus 33.4. So that's the sort of individual time that could be saved on a case. And also the immunohistochemistry requested cases took 1 to 3 days longer than the ones that didn't have immunohistochemistry. So these are all the bits of time that we believe that this tool, may be able to
save. I think
the
latter is extremely significant, right? If by the time I get to the case, I already have and not have to wait 24, that's great for the patient. And
So well, that's all about having everything you need in one sitting to make that decision, so that you're not sort of, because otherwise you're making two sets of decisions, you know, to request immunohistochemistry and then what the final decision is. So we're trying to streamline the workflow and make it leaner so that, you know, that happens in one sitting. But obviously we've only tested it sort of on our cases, and we'd have to see how it performed sort of more widely. But that's some sort of indication of how we think it might perform.
And without any bias for the system, for the algorithms that you developed, you feel, I guess my fear in things like that is if I let it to the AI, that we're going to over-order immunohistochemistry. And by the time, did any of the pathologists feel, you know, looking at the IRC that, hey, I didn't even need this. This was so obvious. How, I'm sure it's going to vary among pathologists, but you see what I'm getting at. Are we in this time where we have to be very conservative with resources, especially in England, I imagine, is it going to over-order, or I'm okay if it's under-order because you can always order them.
Yeah, so it's a really good point. Yeah, so we considered this really carefully, and what we came up with was setting three sort of thresholds whereby we would look at the tool performing at different levels, and perhaps, you know, laboratories, if we can establish the regulatory framework, could set it to how they, you know, to so that it did an acceptable amount of over-ordering versus.
So it's possible, Andrea, to tweak, like if let's say you develop this and like other companies, hopefully you start selling it. Is it possible for individual lab to set their threshold to be stringent, less order or more order?
Yeah, basically, whenever we design this kind of algorithm trying to make a binary decision, we can look at the receiver operating curve, and which compares basically different thresholds of performance for the algorithm. So depending on how we set the threshold, we're going to have a different number of true positives but false positives as well. So there is this trade-off that, So your worry with over-ordering corresponds to the number of false positives in this case that we have. Right. And so if we want to be very conservative, for example, our most conservative point set, in that case, we would have an over-ordering percentage of around 15%.
15?
Yeah.
That's not that bad. All right.
And... that comes at the cost of specificity. So basically the true positive rate would be 65% in that case. So the algorithm loses the ability to pick up some of the cases. But luckily for this particular algorithm, that doesn't result in a dangerous...
you're back to where you started without the algorithm, which is to order it at that time. So it's not a big deal. That's wonderful. But I think there is an inherent element here of diagnostic assistance, right? Because in a way, the program that the AI algorithm is telling you this is an atypical focus. So I wonder how that also could be. I guess it needs a different study, but that's what's based on, right? We're hoping that you start coming and you see the images of the atypical foci that's already in some programs on the market are heading that way, right?
Yeah, and that's an interesting question. Yeah, so we're aware there are solutions on the market, and we wanted to do something distinct from that, and hence sort of deliberately targeting ambiguous areas for the immunohistochemistry. But you're right, it may flag atypical or, you know, areas, small areas of cancer to a pathologist, but that wasn't our sort of primary focus when we built the tool.
Wonderful. Maybe the next project. So what's next? The next project, maybe do both, right? But
Should I do this one, Andre? Yeah, so it's exciting, but we have some open questions, I think, which is where we would want to answer those next. So I think we'd like to see this working in a workflow, and the sort of open questions that we have are, you know, is there any bias in the data, or you know, will it be, do we need more data, will it be generalizable in a setting, how will it perform in a prospective workflow, will we need to validate it further, And also, how will others make use of this? To a certain extent, where we go next depends on how much interest there is from the field in this tool. So yeah, those are the kinds of things we'd like to answer to sort of work out where we're going next with this, I think.
Wonderful. Still some work to do, but this is extremely promising. I was really glad to read this paper and that you submitted it to ModPath, and it's a great example of what to look forward with AI help and smart engineers like Andrea and others on the paper helping us with these difficult decisions.
Well, it's very generous.
I appreciate the opportunity and I really enjoyed it, and I hope to continue receiving great studies from you, not only on AI, and thank you very much for your time.
Great. Thank you very much for the invitation. Really enjoyed chatting about the paper, so thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks a lot.
Any opinions expressed in this podcast are the speaker's own and do not represent the views of Modern Pathology, Springer Nature, UAB, or USCAP. Your ModPath Chat host and scientific director is Dr. George Netto. Producers are Christina Crow, Amber Jackson, Dr. Sarah Jang, and Dr. Catherine Ketchum. Technical direction is provided by Kaminsky Productions, music by Mitch Neubauer. Thanks to the authors, reviewers, and editors of Modern Pathology for making this podcast possible.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.